Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The Raider Bride by Johanna Wittenberg. Narrated by Amy Landon. Chapter 1. Tromøy, Norway. June 1st, AD 822. Cheers rang in her ears as Ragnhild squared off against Bert in the practice yard. Tromøy's warriors crowded the ropes, eager for the long-awaited match. The opponents had trained many of them, and Bert was taking the field for the first time since he'd nearly been killed in battle the previous autumn. Ragnhild had nursed him all winter, and now she was ready to give him a beating. Jarl Borg signaled the start, and Ragnhild lunged forward, driving her wooden sword at Bert's throat. He knocked the weapon aside with his shield and thrust his own blade into her midsection. She pivoted to let Bert's sword slide past her. He stumbled, and much as Ragnhild wanted to whack him, habit made her hold back while he regained his balance. She let him swing again, and brought her shield up a fraction too late, allowing his blade to slip past her guard. Bert pulled his strike just before the blunt wooden tip touched her chest. He scowled and yanked his sword down. Ragnhild caught his furious glare as he whirled and stormed off the practice yard. Åsa came up alongside her. "You shouldn't let him win." Ragnhild gave her queen a rueful glance. "I thought I was being subtle."
"You were."
Åsa shook back her red-gold hair. "The rest of us wouldn't have noticed if Bert hadn't reacted. But he knows." Ragnhild's shoulders slumped.
"I was trying to build his confidence."
"That's not the way to do it." Though Åsa was only 2 years older than Ragnhild, the young queen seemed a decade wiser. When she was the same age Ragnhild was now, Åsa had avenged her father's murder and won back his kingdom.
"Well, it won't help if he loses every time either," Ragnhild pointed out.
Åsa sighed.
"True, but I think you'll have to let him find his own way."
Ragnhild rammed her practice sword back in the barrel and watched Bert limp across the yard to the smithy. The sag of his shoulders proclaimed his dejection. She tugged on her ratty brown braid, coiling it around her fist. She was no nursemaid, yet all winter when she'd longed to be out hunting, she'd changed Bert's dressings, fed him, helped him to the privy. Worrying over him had taken its toll, and now that he was on his feet again, she had to walk on eggshells to spare his pride. But he had saved her life, and been crippled for it. She owed him.
"Let Ulf talk to him," said Åsa, taking her by the arm.
Ragnhild knew she was right. Before he became Tromøy's smith, Ulf himself had been crippled in battle. He was probably the only person on Tromøy who understood Bert.
Bert stomped across the yard toward the smithy.
"Go ahead. Run and hide your shame."
That was all he seemed able to do these days. He hated Ragnhild to see him this way. Today he'd hoped to prove himself. Instead, she'd let him win, like an infant or an old man. He'd never have her respect again, or anyone else's. He'd had such hopes when Åsa had accepted his oath the year before. It seemed as if here, on Tromøy, he'd found a place to belong at last. When his Irish master died, no other lord in Ireland would have a Fingal in his household troops, even though Bert had been a Christian living among them for a decade. With little money and no property, he'd taken ship to the Norse lands of his birth, a place he hadn't seen since he was 9 years old. But here he'd been shunned for his Irish accent and Christian ways, until Åsa gave him a chance. And now that chance, like everything else in Bert's life, was lost. He was a misfit here, as he was everywhere. If only he'd been killed in battle. All he'd ever wanted was to give his life for Ragnhild. The shield maiden had captured his heart the moment he'd laid eyes on her. He wasn't sure why. She was no Christian, and certainly no lady. There was a wildness about her that spoke to his soul. But he did not speak to hers. That she'd made abundantly clear. After he'd nearly died saving her life, she'd been duty-bound to care for him, but his weakness made her disdain him all the more. She hid it well, but he could read the distaste in her eyes. Over the winter, he'd tried to tell her of the joys of Christ,
but she only rolled her eyes and shoved a spoonful of porridge in his mouth. Like everyone else here, heathens all, when he shared the good news of Christ with them, their eyes glazed over like good-natured corpses. Eventually he gave up, though he felt a secret guilt at his failure. Perhaps his faith had lost its fire, here in a pagan land. He'd not confessed to a priest for over a year, since he'd come to this godforsaken country, nor heard Mass or taken communion. He tried as best he could to keep the faith alive, yet he feared he was sinking into the swampland of error, day by treacherous day.
Ulf looked up as Bert entered the smithy.
The droop of the man's shoulders told Ulf everything he needed to know.
"It takes a while to get your strength back," he said. "It's been more than half a year."
Ulf stiffened at Bert's morose tone.
"You were nearly killed." "I wish I had been," Bert muttered.
Ulf sighed. If Bert had died in battle last fall, weapon in hand, he'd be in Valhöll now, fighting and feasting, waiting for Ragnarok. Or would he? Ulf smiled at the image of the Christian warrior, waking from death to find himself on the mead benches of Odin's corpse hall, drinking with the pagans who'd sent him there.
"What becomes of Christian warriors when you're killed in battle?" "We go to heaven, if we deserve it."
Bert's tone was clipped. Ulf grunted. Heaven. From what he'd heard, it was a gutless kind of place with lots of singing. He doubted they had decent mead or ale. Better the Christian had lived. Bert picked up a knife and began to carve a sword grip. His skills in the smithy were useful but limited. The man couldn't swing a hammer yet, though he tried every day. Ulf wondered if Bert would ever fully regain the strength to go into battle again. If he didn't, what would become of him? He wouldn't be able to row, either. There was not much use on Thromoy for a cripple. Ulf was grateful that his own injuries allowed him to function. His legs had been permanently maimed, preventing him from marching any distance or running. But with his massive upper body strength, Ulf could still hold his own in a shield wall and pull an oar with the best of them. Conversely, Bert had been wounded in the back and the stomach, damaging muscles needed to wield a sword or row a ship. And being a Christian, he couldn't very well become a skald or a sorcerer. Those were about the only occupations open to a layman in the Norse world. Ulf hoped Bert would regain his strength with time. Ragnhild entered the dim hall, lit only by shafts of daylight from the smoke hole and gable ends and the sullen embers of the long fire. The cavernous room was empty at this time of day, when everyone was out of doors making the most of the early summer weather. She sat down on the bench and took up her sword, lady's servant. She pulled a whetstone from the pouch that hung from her belt and ran the stone across the blade. It was a pointless exercise, for Ulf had forged lady's servant from Woot's steel, a metal that held an edge like no other. Still, the long, smooth strokes soothed Ragnhild into a mindless trance. The creak of the outer door jolted her from the reverie. Midday light invaded the hall as Einar burst in. The warrior was out of breath from running.
"It's your brother," he wheezed.
Ragnhild put the whetstone aside and rose, gripping her sword.
"Which one?"
"Wave Rider,"
Einar gasped.
"Orlig."
Ragnhild relaxed.
"Only one ship?"
Einar nodded, still catching his breath.
"Not an attack, then."
Even so, Ragnhild strapped on her sword and picked up her shield. She followed Einar out of the dim warmth of the hall into the chill wind, where Ösa and her household guard were assembling in the yard.
"Einar tells me the ship is your brother's," Ösa said,
the question in her voice.
"Orlik is my younger brother," Ragnhild said. "He wasn't part of my father's attack last year." "I can't imagine Sölvi sending a friendly envoy," said Ösa. Ragnhild smirked. "Not after we trounced him and he fled home to lick his wounds. Or after you raided his hoard."
Ragnhild smiled at the memory of stealing her father's treasure for Ösa. Sylvie had sent her elder brother, Harald, to get it back, but Åsa had beaten him too, and sent him home. So why was Orlik here now? Clouds scurried across the sky, and a spate of rain swatted her in the face. Ragnhild blinked the water out of her eyes as they set off down the trail. Wave Rider's familiar outline neared the beach. Orlik's longship carried 35 men, enough for raiding a small settlement, but not enough to threaten Tromoy's 100 well-trained warriors. The dragon figurehead was missing from the prow, sign of peaceful intent. At a shout, the sail came rattling down. The sailors gathered its folds and lashed it to the yard, while rowers ran out their oars and dug blades into the surge. As they drew close, Ragnhild made out her brother at the helm, the wind ruffling his coppery hair, as he squinted up at the telltale on the mast, judging the angle of the wind for landing. She waited just above the tide line. As the keel grounded on the gravel beach, her gaze met her brother's, and she felt her face twitch into an involuntary smile matching the one that spread across Orlik's face. An image of him grinning down at her from a tree flashed through her mind. The sudden warmth of the distant memory took her breath away. She had missed him more than she'd realized.
"Welcome, brother!"
She gripped the prow to steady it, as the crew splashed over the side, then stepped away while the warriors heaved the boat up on the beach. Orlik leaped off the bow and landed at her side, gravel crunching under his boots.
"I am glad to see you, sister."
Ragnhild lifted her chin to be sure her brother noted the tattoo she'd received on her neck over the winter, the marks of a battle commander. Orlik's gaze fastened on them, and his eyebrows raised in appreciation. Satisfied, Ragnhild turned to Åsa, who waited at the head of her household guards. Tromoy's hird had grown over the winter months. News of Åsa's triumphs over the Danes and Ragnhild's father had spread and attracted warriors, as had rumors of her newfound wealth.
"Åsa, queen, I would like to present my brother, Orlik, younger son of King Sylvi."
Orlik swept into a low bow.
"Greetings, lady. I come in peace."
Åsa said, "Welcome, Lord Orlik. You and your men are welcome on my island. You must be weary after your journey. Come to the hall. Refresh yourselves."
She started up the trail, her household guard falling in around her.
Orlik shot a glance at Einar, Thorgeir, and Svein, the three Húskarlar who had been Sylvi's men before swearing to Åsa.
Ragnhild tensed. Their faces remained neutral, but hands strayed to sword hilts. The party climbed the trail to Tromoy's hall. Åsa ushered her guests through the massive oaken doors, intricately carved with entwined beasts picked out in vivid red and blue paint. The workmanship was every bit the equal of Sylvi's hall. Ragnhild glanced at her brother to see if he was impressed. His gaze flicked over the carvings, then up to the high roof as he stepped into the entryway. Inside the great hall, they all stood blinking in the pine-scented gloom. Servants had stirred up the long fire and lit the whale oil lamps that hung from the beams. Åsa commenced the traditional greeting, conducting Orlik to the guest of honor's place at the far end of the hall. Then she mounted the platform to her high seat. The massive chair was supported with pillars carved with scenes from legend, picked out in vivid paint. In the flickering firelight, Odin seemed to cast his spear, while his ravens took wing. The warriors welcomed Orlik's men among them on the deep benches that ran the length of the hall on both sides of the long fire. Ragnhild made sure her brother was watching when she took her place at the head of her shield maidens. He commanded a force, and so did she. Servants carried in basins of warm water, aromatic with herbs, and clean towels. When all had washed, a senior apprentice to the sorceress Hyde entered with the silver-chased drinking horn brimming with ale. She served Åsa first, then Orlik. Ragnhild could barely contain her impatience as the apprentice carried the horn around the long fire. Once all had drunk the welcome ale, Húskarlar and visitors alike settled back expectantly.
"Tell me, Lord Orlik, what brings you to my shores?"
Åsa asked her guest.
Orlik took a deep breath and turned to Ragnhild. "I have news for my sister. There is no easy way to say this. Father is dead."
The news hit Ranghild like a fire arrow, searing into her chest. She felt the blood drain from her cheeks. Why do I care? I owe him nothing. How?
Raiding in Ireland. He was killed by King Murtagh.
The name sent another shock through Ranghild. Murtagh was the Irish king to whom her father had promised her in marriage, for a treasure in silver. Like a slave, that's all I was to him, something to sell. Well, I won my freedom. She realized Orlick was still speaking to her.
Father sought to take advantage of the disputed kingship in Ireland and start raiding again, but he lost his luck and Murtagh defeated him.
What Orlick did not say was that Solvi had lost his luck when Ossa had beaten him in battle the year before, and Ranghild had stolen his hoard.
The Irish ambushed him, and half his crew was slaughtered. Father escaped with his ship and a handful of men, but he died of his wounds on the voyage home. We buried him in the ancestral mound, and Harald stands for king.
Her brother's words kindled a flame in Ranghild. Now she blurted the words that burned within her.
I will return with you to claim Gausel,
her inheritance. Gausel was a small steading, but it held a strategic position to the seaways, and all the fertile lands of the Yeren lay under its jurisdiction. Orlick dropped his gaze to the table, his ears red at the tips.
Harald believes you took your inheritance when you raided father's hoard. He intends to keep Gausel.
Fury seared Ranghild's chest, incinerating the shock of her father's death. Silver was one thing, but this was land, her land. Her brother had no right to it. Gausel is Odal land, she said. Mother left it to me. It's mine by right of inheritance. Harald cannot take it.
He thinks he can, said Orlick.
Blood thundered in Ranghild's ears. I'll fight him for it.
Ranghild, you must listen to reason,
Orlick protested.
Harald is not yet king, but he controls the land, and the warriors follow him.
Harald was clever to send this news with Orlick, the brother closest to her in age. Ranghild had spent many hours beside him, fishing, training at arms, storytelling, learning the runes. There was a time when they had known each other's innermost hopes, and Harald counted on that. She shook off those thoughts.
I'm coming with you, to claim what's mine.
Orlick met her gaze.
Harald sails to war, to take revenge on King Murtagh.
Of course, Harald could not claim the kingship without avenging father's death. Vengeance for a father she'd hated, against a man she'd never met. But this Irish king had tried to buy her like a thrall, like a peace cow. It was an insult that humiliated her, made her look weak. If she proved herself in battle against Murtagh, Harald could not withhold her land.
Nevertheless, brother,
I'm coming.
Orlick raised his brows and crossed his arms over his chest.
Harald will not welcome you.
He can't stop me, she said flatly. And neither can you.
There was only one who could stop her, the queen who had her oath.
Ranghild looked to Ossa, who said gravely,
I, of all people, understand vengeance for a father. This is your time. Go. Show the world your fierce heart. Your fame will spread far and wide.
Fame. What every warrior needed to open doors in life and to live on after death.
Ranghild had gained a reputation, but a fledgling one. She had bested her father, but he had been an old man. She'd fought the Danes, but only as one of many warriors alongside Ossa. Now she led a hird of shield maidens who were skilled fighters, but they still had much to prove. If she sailed with her brothers and took vengeance on the Irish king, her reputation would be made. If she killed her father's slayer, she would be greater than her father. No matter whether she survived the battle, she would live forever in the songs of skalds. The hunger for it gnawed in her chest.
It would reflect well on me, Ossa added, to have you as one of my leaders.
She looked at Einar, Svein, and Thorgeir thoughtfully.
The Lady Ranghild will need experienced warriors to crew her ship. Do you wish to sail with her?
Ragnhild saw her own desire reflected in their faces. Orlik leaned back, narrowing his eyes.
Harald will not welcome traitors.
Ossa ignored him. Go with Ragnhild, she said to the three warriors. I expect you to bring her back to me in one piece. Olvir and Jarl Borg will remain here to lead my Huskarlar.
Thank you, lady,
said Einar, casting a defiant gaze at Orlik.
I sail with Ragnhild.
Heads turned to look at Bert. The Christian warrior had risen to his feet, and now he met Ranghild's eye with a resolute expression. You can't. Would she never be rid of this man? You're not fit to make the journey. Bert said,
Nevertheless, I sail with you.
Ragnhild turned to Ossa.
You can't allow it.
Ossa regarded Bert. You have healed over the winter. But she's right. You are not yet strong enough to make such an arduous voyage. He lifted his chin.
My queen, my life is my own to do with as I see fit. The Lady Ragnhild spent the winter caring for me, and now I wish to repay the debt. Though not as strong as I was, I can still be of much use on this voyage. I have lived in Ireland, and fought beside the Irish. I know their speech and their ways. I know how they make war.
Ragnhild held her tongue, as did everyone in the hall, rather than say what they were all thinking, that a man as crippled as Bert would be a liability to the entire crew. He walked with difficulty, and certainly couldn't pull an oar. It was selfish of him to insist on coming. The others may well have to risk their lives for his. But nobody said a word. Not a soul in Tromoy's great hall would impugn the courage of the man who had all but given his life to save Ragnhild. Least of all, Ragnhild herself.
Very well, said Ossa. You may go.
Bert hid his excitement beneath a stone face, but it roiled inside him like surge in a storm. Ireland. The very mention of it sent his heart pounding. He hadn't realized how he missed the country, the people, and their ways. He longed for their lilting, gentle speech and sprightly music, the green land and mild climate, the softness of the air. He'd never belonged here, though this was the land of his birth. For better or worse, he was an Irishman and a Christian. Now he sailed with their enemies to make war on the people he loved, the people who'd cast him out. What did he hope to accomplish? Could he find a way to protect them from the Norse? He laughed at the idea. He could barely lift his sword. It was more likely he'd stand by and watch the Norse slaughter them. But he couldn't stay behind. The thought of seeing Ireland again bloomed in his heart, leaving room for nothing else. And her. He'd be with Ragnhild. The country of his heart didn't want him, nor the woman. But he couldn't bear to be parted from either of them. Chapter 2. The next day, while Orlik and his men rested in the guesthouse, Ragnhild led her crew in outfitting Raider Bride. Solvi had it built as a bridal ship to deliver Ragnhild to her Irish husband. But Ragnhild had seized the vessel and given it a new name. She smiled grimly. I will come to you now, husband, and you will wish you'd never met me. Her hand-picked crew consisted of 18 men-at-arms and an equal number of women warriors. 30 of them were needed to row the ship, plus one helmsman. Ragnhild, Einar, Svein, and Thorgeir were all competent to man the steering oar. The remaining crew would take turns relieving the rowers when needed and tending to other chores aboard ship, such as serving out food, making repairs, and the endless bailing required on a wooden vessel. It remained to be seen what Bert could do. Ragnhild looked on the shield maidens with pride. They were no strangers to hard work, tough as the men, and after a year of hard training, equally skilled with weapons. Foremost among them was Unn, a farm girl from the hinterlands. She and her five sisters had joined Ossa's hird at the assembly the year before. Un was once the second eldest of the sisters, until the oldest, Helga, had been killed in battle against the Danes. Ragnhild joined Einar, Thorgeir, and Svein, as they carefully wrapped their chainmail brynja in oiled sheepskin and stowed them in their sea chests with their swords and helmets. The rest of the crew packed what they had. Most of them had come fresh off the farm without gear, and Ösa had provided each of them with a helmet, shield, and weapons of the highest quality, swords, spears, and battle axes. Some had been taken from the vanquished Danes, while others were forged in Ulf's workshop. The newest swords were made of precious wood steel, and bore the inscription, Cross, Ulfber, Cross T, named for Tromoy Smith and for Bert. Bert had insisted on inscribing the Christ rune on the blades to give protection in battle. Ragnhild looked up as Bert emerged from the smithy, trundling his sea chest on a handcart. From his belt hung a new sword of wood steel. He'd stow it in his sea chest for the voyage, but no doubt he wanted to show it off. Ragnhild shook her head. Light as it was, could he even wield it? She gathered with Tromoy's folk on the shore, where the Vulva Hæd and her acolytes sacrificed a goat to bring favor from the gods. Ragnhild joined her crew in the chant, as the sorceress anointed the voyagers with sacrificial blood. Hæd sprinkled the remaining blood on the prow of each longship. They loaded the goat's carcass in a cart, and hauled it up the trail to the yard, where Toki and his men had kindled the cooking fire. The men butchered the goat, and set the meat to simmer in a huge cauldron hung on a tripod over the fire. Then Toki broke out a barrel of mead, and another of ale, and everyone gathered around the fire to drink while the meat cooked. Tromoy's folk feasted through the long summer evening. After the meal was eaten, Ragnhild's crew fletched arrows and sharpened blades, as they chattered in anticipation of the adventure before them. Most of them were farmers, who had never been out of the district, much less on a sea voyage. They would be making a week's voyage around the southern cape, to the western side of the mountains to join Harald at Solbakk in Rogaland. From there, Ireland lay far south across the sea. It was a land famed for its beauty and riches. To make such a journey and do battle with an Irish king were the deeds skalds sang of. "Tell us about Ireland, Bert," Ösa said. Bert's eyes took on a dreamy glaze.
"It is a beautiful country. An emerald set on a silken sea."
He must be longing to see the land that was home for most of his life, Ragnhild thought. She hadn't considered it quite that way before. She'd assumed that he wanted to come along to be near her. This trip had been her way to cut ties with Bert, and now she feared she'd never be rid of him. Still, he was the only one who knew the language, the customs, and the land.
"You were a warrior there,"
Un prompted. The dream mist cleared from Bert's eyes.
"Yes, I was a slave until I was 12. Then my master put a sword in my hand and trained me in the ways of the Irish warriors."
"How do they fight?" said Ösa.
"Like cowards," Orlig blurted. "They were brave enough to best your father," Bert countered.
Orlig's face turned red, but he clamped his jaw shut.
"The Irish are fierce warriors, but they fight differently than the Norse," Bert said. "They know their terrain, and are masters of woodland fighting. They hide in the forests and marshes and attack without warning, then run away, like cowards. But cowards they are not. They are cunning and dangerous. This is something I don't think your elder brother takes into account. To pursue them as they retreat is often a mistake, for they are luring you into a trap where you will find your warriors surrounded."
This statement was met with a long silence, as Orlig glowered. No doubt, this was how Solveig met his death.
"They follow the White Christ, and don't believe in our gods," said Ragnhild, to break the tension.
Bert scowled.
"Don't call him that."
The Norse byname for Christ was no compliment. Calling someone white was tantamount to calling them a coward. But Ragnhild was not finished teasing Bert.
"Your god must be lonely. Don't the Irish get bored with one measly deity?"
"God is a trinity, the Father, Son, and Holy Ghost,"
Your god is a Draugr?
Sample complete. Ready to continue?